Hey, everybody. Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast. Thank you for checking out another episode of the show. Today's feature, singer-songwriter and returning guest, Chris Chamness. Chris has been working on some brand new tunes, a new record, and stops by to talk about it and even play a couple live acoustic for us. I do want to remind you, as always, Rock Paper Podcast is brought to you by Roughneck Beard Company and American Rambler. Located right here in St. Louis, over in the Maplewood area, off of Manchester. Stop by and visit them and pick up some of your favorite all-natural beard oils, beard balms, or your junk powder. Or shop 24/7 at roughneckbeardcompany.com. Use my code RPP15 for an exclusive 15% off your purchase. You know, during the hot summer months, it may be tempting to shave. But did you know that having a beard can keep you cooler in the summer heat? Beards provide protection from UV rays and keep sweat off your face so you can keep cooler longer in the hottest heat. Just make sure to keep your beard clean with Roughneck's Housemade Beard Bar. All natural soap with milled oats and African black soap. Cleanses amazingly without stripping away your natural oils. And if you do decide to shave it off, do it with American Rambler and their amazing pre-shave oils and Miracle Tonic Aftershave. Either way, they've got you covered. Find it all at roughneckbeardcompany.com today and use my code RPP15 for an exclusive 15% off. Also, big shout out to Heil Sound for their continued support and help me make this show sound great. Been recording these shows with my PR40. I love it, and I think you would too. So check it out, HeilSound.com today, and take your recording to the next level. And if you'd like to help continue support this show, also a great way to do that would be visiting the BuyJack.com merch store. We got I got a merch store set up there with shirts and hats and tank tops and all kinds of fun stuff. So check it out, BuyJack.com/rockpaperpodcast, and help put a couple bucks towards the show. Big thank you to anybody that's purchased already. I really, truly appreciate all the support. So thank you, thank you, thank you. You can find me on the socials. You can find me at rockpaperpodcast.com. Hit me up on the email at rockpaperpodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Let me know what you think of Chris's brand new tunes. And with all that out of the way, sit back, relax, and enjoy this new episode with Chris Chamness.
Podcast is kind of like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
This is Chris Chamness, and you're listening to Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
This is beat paper. Paper covers rock. Rock beats is the Shane covers nonstop. Never know what new kind of guests that he's got coming at you. Live and direct on the spot. Could be rock, folk, country, or hip hop, jazz. All kind of folks that he has. Could be an artist or a comedian to make you laugh on the
Rock Paper Podcast.
Double decker fudge round, rolling round town. Shane coming at you live and direct from ground zero. He's your hero, he's your bestie. Rock Paper Podcast with Shane Presley.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri. Hanging out today with Chris Chamness. I said it right, didn't I?
Chamness.
Chamness, kind of, yeah. Man.
Not quite like an was, A. Yeah. So I'm, yeah, that's
all. It's messing me up too. Yeah. Well, and then like, that's the thing. Like sometimes you know, I just had you say it. And then like, and then I get to thinking, I'm like, wait, was it this way or that? And then I get to overthinking it and too much. And
that's all right.
Yeah. But
it's all right.
Chamness.
Yeah. Like spam.
There we go.
Yeah. Yeah,
man.
Yeah.
We did one of these. Actually, I looked at it was 2 years ago, May of 19, we hung out with the band, the Monolithic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we first met, and we kind of been
for, you know, maintain connection through social media and everything. Yep. Since I haven't really got to see you. We don't, you know, we kind of live at very different parts.
You know, probably about 2.5 hours apart, yeah. Honestly. So.
But we met here in the middle of downtown St. Louis, get to hang out today, and you got working on some brand new solo material,
yep.
Which is what we're going to get into. But I thought this would be cool, especially, you know, just the two of us today, that we can kind of dive into some of your other stories of you and especially as a solo songwriter and stuff, mm-hmm. like what some of the stories are coming about behind some of these songs and
sure.
the early days of picking up a guitar and things. So,
yeah.
I guess, you always live in Southern Illinois. Has that always been home for you?
I lived there basically when I was born through college. I went to SIU in Carbondale. And then I spent a few years after that living up in Chicago, actually.
Okay.
And then in Rockford, too, which is just like a stone's throw from the Wisconsin border. And then moved back down to Southern Illinois again. So now I'm close once again to Carbondale.
All right. I went over there not too long ago. Me and my uncle, it's been several years now, but he's a big fan of Head East.
Oh, their bass player is the one who taught me how to play guitar.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Rich Creedor. Yeah. He doesn't play with them anymore. He left several years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've definitely had a lot of guys in and out of the lineup, yes. and stuff, but
he was with them for about 20, 25 years. I want to say, yeah. something like that. I have no idea.
Well, we went over there. It was some kind of, I think it was originally the idea was like a PBS kind of special of some sort they were filming. And I think it was at the university.
Huh.
Okay. In the theater or something like that. I think uh-huh. it was something like, I don't know. Some of the details are fuzzy, but
right.
what I do remember is we went to Quattro's Pizza, yes. while we were over there, and that was awesome. So
Quattro's is amazing.
Yeah. So shout out to Quattro's. If you want to start sponsoring the show or anything, that would be great. And or just send me some free pizza. I'd be happy with that too.
Growing up in Southern Illinois, you got the phone number stuck in your head. Did you ever hear the jingle? Like, this is like on the radio, you know, like whenever everywhere always had the radio on, you always heard their jingle, you know, like, I don't know if you want me to sing it, but it's okay. But it gives you their phone number every time. And so it just so happened that recently we were going to get some pizza from there. And my dad was over visiting, and he's like, what's their phone number again? And he was being serious, cause I looked at him, I thought he was just joking, you know? And I was right. like, we heard that like every day for a long time, but yeah, so I remembered it. I'll probably remember that until I die.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There's definitely,
it's good though.
Some of the advertising, there's a reason why somebody got paid a lot of money to come up with those things.
Like, yeah.
You know, they get those little catchy earworms and they just get stuck in your head. And, but yeah, man, anyway, but that's what I think about when I was like, man, I've been thinking about that pizza for quite a while. I want to get back down there and try some more pizza.
Yes. Well, now I know that maybe the next time I'm out this way, I'll bring you some Quattro's.
There you go. Yeah. We talk about it. Me and my uncle, like every now and then we'll like, you know, come up and talk about maybe another road trip and do that some, but, So you said you learned some guitar from him and
Rich Creedor taught me how to play for the first 7 years of playing. I was like 11 to 18, and then as soon as I started going to college, I just basically started doing it on my own.
Yeah. Did you have any family play or anything? Like, what was like the initial thing that like when did you made you want to pick up a guitar?
The Beatles.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back when I was like 9 or 10, they had this was whenever they were releasing that Beatles One collection. And I'd always kind of been into music, even like when I was a really little kid. Like, I used to pick up different items around the house and pretend like I was playing the guitar, like even when I was like 1 or 2. And I'd seen it on VHS. They had a commercial out for that thing. And I just, for that compilation, I just thought it looks so cool, you know, and I wanted to be like that, you know? So that was like my initial thing. Especially the footage of them on the rooftop in 1969. I was just like, they are so awesome. Like, I wish I was like that, you know? And so then down it, you know, they were like my obsession for a long time. And I'm sure Rich had to teach me like countless Beatles songs before I finally found somebody else, you know, like The Who or, you know, anybody else.
Right.
So,
yeah. I mean, but like, that's, you know, as I talk about it quite a bit on the show, but it just kind of blows my mind still, like, you know, how much those four guys created and changed music and culture and everything. Like,
oh yeah.
And how fast everything was happening. Like, you know, they produced a lot in their time together.
Seven years.
But they weren't, it's not like it was like a super long period of time. Like that. But they have a large body of work to show for that. Mm-hmm. But it's like, and then just like crazy to think about, like, and how fast everything was happening. Like they're, you know, their looks and their, you know, just everything's just evolving so fast at that time and stuff. So
They had like decades of a lifetime together within about 7 years. Like just not only like you mentioned their appearance, you know, like the way that evolved in a very short amount of time is crazy. Like you don't have that kind of, speed right now, like, which is fine.
Yeah. But it's just wild, man. Those guys are, you know, and then like, I always think about it too, like that people still say they suck or something, you know, like some, you know,
just say that to sound edgy.
Right. But it was just like, how can you say that? Like so many people, you know, it just wouldn't, I don't even know who probably wouldn't even play music, be playing today.
Right.
Because if those guys, you know, who knows what to think about it, but if they're like that, well, that's what's like kind of crazy is there's that movie, like, whatever, yesterday they made it like, if nobody knew the Beatles existed,
kind of thing.
It's like, so it's like, but, and that's like, you know, that's kind of the thing is like, it's just weird to think about how much they've changed everything we know at the last 60 years.
Or whatever. Oh, absolutely.
But, definitely a good, starting point. I mean, and they have some of those easier pop kind of single songs that you can actually like learn.
I think like the first one that really got to me was Love Me Do,
which
is like their first single they ever released. I will say, you asked if there's anybody in my family. Neither of my parents really play that much music. Like I think they played stuff, you know, like maybe in marching band or something like that, or just in school in general. But, I remember growing up when I was like 3 or 4, my uncle Jimmy, so that's on my mom's side, had his senior pictures done with his bass guitar.
Okay.
And that's another one where I was just like, he looks so awesome. I want to be just like, you know, so I basically just like, so my uncle Jimmy is also to thank for me starting to play guitar. Cause then like, I remember that I think there was like a Christmas Eve where we spent up there and he had put like a bow on his bass for me to like play, you know, it was super cool.
Nice, so, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I never really had that. My dad played just a bit, like doing some, you know, he used to dabble with a guitar and harmonica. Harmonica was more his thing.
Like, yeah.
He would sit in with different blues bands or, you know, bluegrass stuff. And then we would jam some just with random players around town sometimes. And obviously having a couple harmonicas he could just keep in the truck and he'd be, you know,
awesome.
Wasn't like had a lot of gear to haul around and set up and stuff, but he could just, you know, jump in and jam with some bands sometimes. And anyway, so like music's always been there, but like I never really had anybody like talent, like, or nothing really pushing me towards like playing and stuff. I've just been a super fan, but
yeah.
But it's cool that you found it, that started playing guitar. But what about songwriting? When does have you always had an interest in writing and
your own stuff? I started writing relatively young, but not very often, because I think I would write, and a lot of the stuff that I would do, especially whenever you're first starting out, is like, you know, it's just super derivative of, you know, so like everything probably sounded like I was trying to rip off a specific Beatles song here and there when I was a kid. And then like I got into like later high school and started writing with a couple of groups then. And like pretty much off and on from then through like my mid 20s, I was, you know, writing here and there, but I never really quite liked a lot of the stuff that I was writing. Like you sit there and you stack yourself up to all the artists that you make, you stack yourself up to their entire career, including like their masterpieces, you know? So you start to get discouraged and it's like, oh, I can't write, you know, I can't write like that. And it's like, well, they all started somewhere, you know? Compare the Beatles' first stuff to their final stuff, I mean, like, what do you, you know, you can't measure that. So then I think like when I was about 25 or 26, I just kind of was like, you know, screw it. I'm going to start writing. And if it's bad, then it's bad. And I just won't put it out. You know, nobody has to hear what I'm doing. And then if it's good, then of course I'll put it out. So that's where I started writing with the band that we talked with a couple of years ago, the Monolithic. And that's kind of like what the breeding ground was for more confidence, I guess, in writing. So was being in that band.
Yeah.
Being with a couple other people who could write very well too.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's like, I don't know if there's actual quote from somebody or whatever, but I think like it's just kind of a general rule down for like Nashville writers. But like they say, like you're going to write 100 bad ones before you write a good, you know, that kind of thing. Like you have to. You just kind of got to get them out of the way. And like, you just got to keep writing until you finally start getting the hang of it and stuff.
Right. So. Yeah. For me, there's like three levels of songwriting. There's like one that like nobody ever hears, and that's because they're awful. There's the second one is that I bring it into the guys that I brought in from my, like for my band. And after playing it, I realize that it's a bad song. And then there's the ones that I bring into them that I think are good. So like there's so many different levels to the quality for me, but the ones that finally like actually get through are the ones that matter, I guess the most. So.
Do you remember the first one or an early one that, is there one that still kind of comes to mind when you think about some of their?
Yeah. Yeah. Like when I was like 17, this girl that I was dating, broke up with me. And so, you know, just, sad, you know. Yeah. So I wrote a song called I remember it was in the same tuning as Name by the Goo Goo Dolls, because we had just actually seen them together live down by the river, and
great band.
And I'd been messing around with that tuning because it's a very different one. They like to use different tunings for their songs, and I ended up writing a song called Lonely Without You, which, and like, I'll be honest, like, I don't think it was that bad of a song, but every now and then the bridge of it will come to me, and man, it was awful. It was so bad. Like, I still get that stuck in my head at least once a month.
Oh, yeah.
And then you have to like beat yourself up for a while before you're like, no, that was, you know, like 14 years ago. So.
Right.
Yeah.
A couple of things came to mind as you're saying that, but I remember, I went to see, I'm like big into a lot of that, like, you know, just because of stuff I grew up with, all the 90s rock and all this, you know, different things. And but it was here in St. Louis that they did like a Way Back Point Fest thing where they brought in a bunch of 90s, you know, groups that we all loved. And so it was kind of fun to see a lot of these guys that you hadn't seen in many years, one of them being Eve Six showed up. And
nice.
And I remember a direct quote, the singer said, he's like, this song may sound like it was written by an 18-year-old, because it was, and, you know, just thinking about singing the song 20 years later, still like that sad, you know, 18-year-old boy or whatever.
So
I just think about, like, you know, if you would have held on to that song and still be playing it today, like what?
Good point. Yeah. I don't think I could. I wouldn't want to.
But yeah, those guys, I think it was like, you know, whatever. If it was Inside Out or whatever, whichever one it was, but
yeah,
it's just kind of crazy to think about, like, that, you know, they still be singing these songs 20, 30 years later.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder sometimes, you know, with even people who have like an even longer career than that, like think about, you know, we keep talking about the Beatles, but like think about Paul McCartney, like cause I saw him at Bush, 5 years ago, and like, you know, he's playing songs that are 50 plus years old, but like the thing is they still resonate. So how much that feel, you know, to
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Indescribable.
Right. It's kind of just strange that, like, yeah, he's still writing new stuff or whatever, but it's like, but people hang on to the songs that you wrote when you were 20 years old or whatever still. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It was kind of weird. Like, you're almost like have to, as a professional, you know, performer, like your life is stuck in this, you know.
Yeah. So he doesn't seem to mind, though. He's not like one of those people, because every now and then you'll get it where it's like people are like, oh, I don't want to play this song again. You know, he like genuinely enjoys every moment, which that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the way, you know, you have to do that. I think you have to embrace it, you know.
Right.
Otherwise, if you push back, I think it's never going to work. Like, there's definitely been cases of bands that are hate their songs that they're known for, whatever, you know, the hit and stuff. So
yeah, when I was like 20, a band that I played at Point Fest, and that was the year that Coheed was there, and like I think they wanted to play like all their new stuff, but you could tell everybody just wanted to welcome home, and so at the end they kind of like sulkily played it, you know, like, I guess I'll play this song, you know. So then of course everybody goes crazy, which probably just made them even more angry, so.
Yeah, that Goo Goo Dolls, I saw those guys not long ago. They did the 20th or 25th, maybe, or whatever it is. I forget the year now. But
is it Dizzy Up the Girl? Yeah,
Dizzy Up the Girl record.
Yeah.
And they
probably would have been the 20th because I think it was released in like 98.
Yeah.
I think.
They came through town and played that. The first set was Dizzy Up the Girl, and the second set was like other deep cuts. And
oh, that's awesome. So like,
it was just them all night at the pageant. It was a great show.
That's really cool. Because that's an amazing album. Yeah. Like, I don't think there's a weak song on it.
So. Yeah. Man, and like, especially get them to just go through the whole record. Like,
yeah,
it's pretty cool. So,
yeah, it would be.
Yeah, it was a good night, man. But yeah, they're fun. They still sound good.
Good.
Yeah.
I'll actually be like a band that I'm really into is Suede. In America, they're called the London Suede because there's like a jazz singer in New York or something goes by Suede. Anyway, it was a whole big thing back in like the mid 90s. They're celebrating their 25th anniversary of one of their huge albums. So I'm actually flying over to Leeds in November to go see that because I like, they never come to America. Oh, so wow. It's like, so I'm playing the whole album thing. I'm totally on board with that.
Yeah. That'd be wild, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never done any of that. I need to, I wish I could travel a little more and see the world and get to experience some of that stuff. But
it was a spur of the moment decision.
Yeah.
But every now and then I get buyer's regret about, but oh, that's all right.
Yeah.
I'm just going to do it.
Yeah, man. Well, you, we're kind of talking about some of this, but, you're working on, some new material we have, mm-hmm. and this is all your debut as a solo artist, correct?
Yes. Yeah. The single and then the EP. Yeah. It's all the first things that I've done just on my own. Cause I always wanted to, I always felt like, I think once again, this is like the Beatles coming into play. I felt like I needed to be in a band, you know, with other creative people. And after a while, I kind of like, I remember a roommate of mine in Chicago was like, just go out on your own at some point. I was like, no, I can't do that, you know? And then finally one day I was like, you know what? I think I can. And about 2 years ago, I got the idea to start trying. So.
Yeah. Well, we've been hard at work on a new EP, and we're the debut single is due out on June 18th, Friday, and you'll be able to pick that up wherever you're getting your digital music at.
Yep.
And but it's a song called "What You've Got," and a lot of fun, man. This is like I wasn't entirely sure what to expect from, you know, obviously I think everybody's probably feeling a similar way because it was your first your debut, man, as an artist. So so it was kind of like I knew some of the, you know, stuff from the band, the, you know, more a little more rock and roll kind of stuff, mm-hmm. and like, and so I figure some of that influence might come through, but I was just, you know, it was always kind of fun to hit play and hear, see what it's going to be, and
sure.
But I really enjoyed this song, man, and it was a lot of fun.
This
any particular story come to mind with this song? Or
not really. It's honestly just about being a musician in general, which maybe that's stereotypical, but like some of the lines in it pertain to some of the guys that I've played with over time. Like the drummer for the Monolithic is the same as the guy who I took in to do these songs. And so some of the lines are about traveling with him, because Shane is like, Shane Cordovant, obviously. Yeah. not you. you know Shane.
I think we've like met in passing. Probably, yeah. Maybe like at an Oyster Bar.
Yeah, show, yeah, and stuff. Yeah. You would have met, because I think he's the one who introduced me to you.
Yeah. He didn't make it to the podcast that day. But we've definitely know each other though.
Yeah. Now he, like, traveling with him is super interesting, because I swear he sees the world completely differently than anybody else you'll ever. And so like, or he'll just, sometimes he's got stories from like his past bands that sound out of this world, you know? And so, and I'm not fit to tell them, because that's another thing. He's just good at is telling these stories. Yeah. You know, if I told them, they wouldn't sound very funny, but, so some of the lines in it are about that. Like there's like a, I think one of the lines, you know, says something like, skies that swallow everywhere, the strange things that you've never heard, you know, always something you won't know. Because, and that was just like referencing his stories, because he always has new stories for you. You feel like he'll have run out at some point. No, there's a new one right there. Right. So, yeah. So some of that's about, I guess, if he wants to think about it that way, some of that song is about him. Right. So, but just about traveling in general too, with a band.
Yeah, man. There's did come to mind. Going into the chorus, there is like, as you mentioned, Razor's Edge.
Yeah, Standing on the Razor's Edge.
And I always, my brain, because I'm a fan, I go to Razor Ramon, 90s wrestling with Scott Hall. And that was his move, was the Razor's Edge. So I don't know if you ever got into wrestling at all, but that's no. Like, so I don't know, like I kept thinking, you know, obviously the song is very different, but I kept thinking every time you say Razor Edge, in my mind I see, you know, just like him doing his move. It's like kind of like where he gets a guy up by his, like grabs him by his like armpits and he lifts him up on and drops him like on his shoulders and stuff. And
oh,
so yeah.
No. I'm honestly the line came to me, and I, because like some, I feel like whenever I do some of my better songwriting, it's just like a bunch of stuff all coming from different directions, and like even on individual lines, it's like from somewhere else, you know, like. And so I, for some reason, while I was writing this song, I imagined the cover of Razor's Edge, which is an AC/DC album. Mm-hmm. And I don't even really listen to them that much, but I just remember seeing it before, and that came to me, and I was like, oh, that's actually a really good analogy for,
yeah,
whatever. Sure. You know, so yeah, yeah. You can apply it to whatever you want.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, there's definitely a bunch of them, but I was like, and that's probably exactly where he, you know, he drew inspiration. And I mean, obviously yeah. Named Razor Ramon, but also you know, it was just like that's just where my mind, that was the reference in my brain, and that, so now,
hey,
like,
that's all right.
And then once I went there, then that's all, like every time you say it, that's where I'm just picturing that. So
that's all right, open to interpretation.
Yeah, yeah, man. But yeah, I've really, well, and it doesn't help, I've really been like getting back. I watched a ton of wrestling as a kid, like me and my brother, you know, and always been practicing all the moves afterwards and stuff. But, it was a big part of my life growing up, and, you know, watching WCW Nitro and all that. And, you know, the years when Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, you know, formed the Outsiders and NWO and all, you know, whatever. I don't know. I don't know how much if you ever watch any of it, but like it was a big chunk of my youth. And like, on A&E, they've been doing a run of like biographies on a lot of these guys.
Oh, cool.
From Mick Foley, Macho Man, Andre the Giant was on that. That was the HBO one, but they ran that also. And, Bret the Hitman Hart and all these guys that I grew up, you know, watching. So it was, and then they started, there's another series that they started doing on A&E also, where they're like going around like looking for their like old stuff, like all the things. I guess they're working on building a like WWE Hall of Fame type of things, where all this will be on display, all these pieces of, you know, whatever outfits and different things, or whatever, sure, whatever it was that made that character. But I don't know, man, it's like, you know, these guys live these wild lives, but like there's, especially watching that biography stuff, like there's, you realize like how, you know, how much these guys are going through and things. And it's like,
oh yeah,
you know, they're, and they're
everybody's human.
Right. So, yeah. But these, their personal lives and how they still got to, like, and some of these guys, like, get addicted to the life, like, of, you know, and it, like, ruins their personal life because they're so into their character
life and stuff. Was probably an adrenaline rush for them.
Yeah. I mean, like, but it only lasts for the 5 minutes you're on in the ring or whatever. And then you step off and then you're like, you're chasing that high again. And
yeah. Stuff, cause so. Then you're like, well, what do I do with the rest of my time?
Now, yeah. You know, so these, I don't know. There's a lot of wild stories that came out of those, and especially that era of, you know, like, and stuff, but like a lot of these guys were doing all sorts of different drugs and different things, you know. It's like, but yeah, I don't know. It's interesting though. But anyway, that's what. So it's been on my mind a lot. Like,
okay, that's all right.
I've been watching a lot of wrestling lately. So
yeah,
and I part of me for part well, one, I just find these guys, a lot of these guys' stories interesting, but two, I think it's probably like a sense of nostalgia for me because because I don't, like, it's not, like I said, I'm not really keeping up with a lot of the current stuff, but this that period of time in my life and stuff, you know, for sure, like going back to you know, sixth grade or whatever, so like kind of, you know, whatever it was in that era of my life and stuff. So
yeah, no, I totally get that.
Yeah. But yeah, man. So you you'll have the debut single out, and you were saying, you mentioned like kind of that AC/DC Razor's Edge artwork kind of came into mind, but you worked on your own artwork for this record, and you had help from somebody helped you out with that, right?
Yeah. So his name is Ahmed Eldin, and he's from Egypt. And he's actually the guy that did the final Pink Floyd album cover, The Endless River, which came out in 2014. Like, it was like a, it's kind of like a companion to what's the really their last album, The Division Bell. It was like a bunch of instrumental stuff that they recorded around them. But then they ended up, the remaining members, like Dave and Nick, put some new stuff kind of over it recently. But yeah, he did the album cover for The Endless River.
So that's pretty wild. I mean, it won just like, you know, that whole like 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon kind of thing.
Yeah. Whatever,
you
know, it's like, yeah. I hope at some, my life goal is to have a Bacon number at some point.
Yeah.
In time.
Right. Yeah, man. Yeah. But, that, it's just, it's cool to have that, you know, a connection there to, of course, to Pink Floyd, but also, it's just neat to have him, especially from Egypt, somebody.
Yeah, he was super great. I didn't know how he would be about responding or anything. But he always came across on his posts as very humble, because once I found out who had done the artwork, I started following him on like Facebook and Instagram, and I would just keep an eye on his stuff. And I was like, I really like all that. And then one day he posted something, you know, and I was like, that would almost be perfect for my record, you know? So I reached out to him, and he was, like I said, just super kind and very responsive.
Yeah, man.
Very easy to work with. So
yeah. And that's cool that you're able to do these kind of things just through the internet.
You know,
like that, we bringing people together like that across the world.
Yep.
So I don't know. It's I just recorded one last night with a group, and they're talking about how recording during the pandemic and everything, and like, and their singer is in Kansas City and the band's in St. Louis. And, so like the whole time, this whole record that they put together is all like Frankenstein from, you know, everybody recorded in separate rooms and everything. Mm-hmm. Nothing was recorded as them as a unit, as a band.
Oh, wow.
So, and it's not, I mean, it still sounds great, but it's just like, it's wild to think about that this entire project was recorded over the internet.
No kidding.
And stuff. So like, you know, people record their parts and sent in, and everything was like done to a click track and stuff.
Sure.
And they lined it all up and produced the pieces. And
we got really lucky that we did all the basic backing tracks to this in February of 2020. So like, it was right before. And so then everything that was left to be done was my doing. So it was easy to just go in the studio with my producer and just do it myself, you know, because at that point in time, it was basically just like, as long as you don't feel sick, we'll keep working, you know, so.
Right. Yeah, weird time to, you know, be thinking about, you know, but like crazy that how much that changed everything and like shut everything down, and just like, it was just, I don't know. I mean, I'm not to take away from anything. Obviously, it's a very serious thing, but it's just like, man, it was like just wild how everything just came to a screeching halt and stuff as far as the music business. And
so
stuff.
Sudden. Yeah. Because I just played a gig and then I was taking a week off to go hang out with some friends in Chicago. And we were out and about, like, and this is on like March 13th, 14th, 15th, you know. And I remember on the 15th, I went to visit my brother up there too. And that was like right when all the news is coming in that tomorrow, you know, the 16th, the famous day, everything's shutting down. You know, it was just like,
yeah,
so sudden. It was crazy.
Yeah. I think I was at the bar working the night before. And then like, yeah, they were like, or, you know, all the rumors are starting, like, yeah, this is our last night or, you know, that kind of stuff. And I'm like, man, it's just crazy. But you were able to at least, I think it's cool that you were able to, you know, still keep working on the record and stuff behind the scenes, making this happen, you and your producer. And what's your producer's name?
So his name is Elijah Shaw. He also just goes by Lidge as short, which is, I've never heard that shortening for a, but anyway, he's so cool. He's, so that's down in Nashville, Tennessee, at his studio that he owns is called Toy Box Studios. You can look it up. And he used to do, I think he just recently stopped, but he used to do all the hay bale sessions for Bonnaroo too. So like a lot of the artists that were coming through, they literally were setting up a studio in all these, in like this makeshift studio that's built out of like hay bales. And, you know, they're recording big names, like all the, you know, I want to say like, I know Damon Albarn is one of them because I'm obsessed with Blur and he told me about that. I can't think of everybody right now. I know, sure. I want to say like maybe Elbow or Spoon or somebody like that, you know, was also in there, but just all the big names that would come through and do a hay bale session at Bonnaroo as well. Mm-hmm. And so you can look all those up on YouTube. But he also, I know that he won a Grammy for something associated with the studio, and I feel terrible that I don't know what it is, but he's awesome. He's great. He was great to work with, and he was just because he's also so honest. You know, you go into a studio and you don't realize that you don't always want a yes man. And so like I think I took six or seven songs in, and so it was great to have somebody say, well, these three are good, but this song that you think you want to record, it actually sucks. Like, we're not going to do that. You know, I'm like, oh, okay. Cause then now I'll go back and listen to the original demos that I had taken in. And I'm like, oh, he was right. That song did suck, you know? So, and then like he even picked one that I wouldn't have even thought that we're doing, that's going to be on the EP. So, he was awesome to work with, and I'll be working with him again on the next release. So, cause I'm building up another arsenal of songs right now.
Very cool. Yeah, I don't know, man. That the whole world is like really interesting to me. Also, like, I kind of wish I mean, not that it's ever like too late, but I kind of wish I would have gone to school younger and learned music production and done some of the stuff. I didn't at the time, you know, when you're going to high school and you're like talking to your guidance counselors and trying to figure out what you want to do with your life and all.
Sure.
At that time, I was like, I don't even know, man.
Yeah.
Like I had an idea. Like, I thought maybe I wanted to be a school teacher. And then, you know, and not that I don't, but it's just like life kind of took a turn. I'm not really pursuing that. And I kind of really got into this music stuff and more and more. And I'm like, man, it would have been cool to, like, if I could do that. Because I do have these ideas sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, people do play songs for me sometimes and I'm like, maybe it'd be cool to do this here or
that.
And like, you know, and I don't know, I really enjoy it. And if I could somehow be around it even more, you know, that would be cool. So
yeah.
But yeah, it's cool to have that person though, like that you guys, that relationship works so well that you were able to, you know, create these songs and put out the best product you could.
Yeah, absolutely. And because he's not only a great producer, he's a great engineer too. Yeah. But, so it was very easy to work with him, in that regard.
Yeah. Sometimes you just need that person like to kind of help you out, like to pitch the ideas or tell you, like, because sometimes you get, I think as artists, some people can kind of get too attached to something sometimes or whatever, you know, where you're like, you've heard it this way, but it's hard to like, you know, think about, well, maybe if we change the, you know, BPM or, whatever to double this, or, you know, whatever, cut that part. And,
yeah,
you know, like it makes some adjustments to it. And like, and then it becomes all of a sudden it clicks and like, here, that's the way it should be, you know, it's mm-hmm. like, so I always agree. You know, it's always a fun thing like to think about, but you know, sometimes people get used to just playing it the same way they've been doing it when they wrote the song. And
oh yeah, no, there's some stuff that I had to after we were done with everything, and then I wanted to start practicing the songs on my own. I had to go and like relearn what I did in the studio because some of it ended up being spur of the moment. I would come up with something, or Lidge would come up with something, and I'd have to play it then. And as soon as the take was good, you know, that was it. Like mm-hmm. I didn't have to play it again. And so I forgot a lot of stuff, but yeah. now it's all coming back to me, luckily.
Sure.
But, without having played a gig yet with that stuff.
Yeah. Well, let's leak out another one. We did a live acoustic version mm-hmm. of which will be the title track, correct?
Yeah. Yes, title track of the EP.
Square One.
Yeah.
And this was super fun, man. This was like my first time hearing this song, and I really enjoyed this a lot. Like it just felt good, you know, just cool. Like as if it was a, I don't know, like it, I was trying to like, I try not to like think about too much, like, but like it definitely kind of just felt familiar, you know, in a sense, like it's one, even though if it's, you're hearing it the first time, you still, mm-hmm. still felt like the something I've heard before. And so, which is always cool. Like sure. too, like, you know, it's just, so I don't know exactly what, I couldn't tell you what it is, but it just like, just felt that feeling came over me. Like,
yeah,
that, like this is, I wanted to start singing along already. Like, I knew the words, but I just, that's, you know, good. It's the first time I heard it. So, yeah. So, I mean, that's what it's a cool thing too, when that kind of music kind of has that effect on you and stuff. Yeah. So, but anything come to mind around Square One?
It's about having anxiety, honestly.
Really?
Anxiety and depression, I guess.
Is that something you deal with a lot? Or?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm on happy pills now, though, so it's better. Yeah. But I mean, obviously, even whenever you take stuff like fluoxetine or whatever, like it's still, you don't always have like great days. So sure. It's not like it just goes away, you know, right. Everything. But I definitely deal with both of those on a regular basis. And so whenever I had written this song, you know, I was like right in the thick of it. And it takes so long to like, to ask for help, you know, from somebody. And like, so, cause like for a long time I was like, you know, I should be able to fix this myself. I shouldn't need to take meds or anything like that. Yeah. You know, but after a while you just have to be like, listen, something is chemically wrong with me. Like I need to do something about it. So that was, sure. That was a big stepping point in my life in general. But yeah, so that's, I think whenever I, cause this is actually like the second version of the song. Cause I think whenever I first wrote it, part of it was about that, but part of it was, also a bit about like the political atmosphere at the time. And then like some of the lyrics weren't that great. And Lidge pointed that out. And I was like, well, actually I kind of have a different idea for some of the verse lines. And that fixed it a lot. And, cause like, I just started like writing in a journal, just my thoughts kind of, just running commentary or whatever. And then I'll go back and read it later. And like, you know, all these phrases kind of just started jumping out at me, and I was like, oh, that'd be a good way to begin every verse, because like every verse begins with the empty blah 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 blah, whatever, you know. So you know, like the first verse is the empty silence you must fill, which is, you know, like all the, which whenever you're just on your own, you know, and you're think, you know, all your thoughts are what's occupying your mind, you know, the empty things we must try, meaning like the empty things that you try to do to get over your depression or your anxiety or put, not maybe not get over it, but push through it. So it ended up being about that. It ended up being a much better song. Cause I also like who needs another political song, you know, right, so right now, like unless I was actually going to say something super different, there's no point. So
sure.
Yeah. Silence you must fill with
lots of mountains made from hills. Was a twist around your head, misremembering things unsaid. The empty places we must hide. What you have to show, what you do to survive. Maybe it's another dream, broken frame on a silver screen. Now we're back to where we started. Nothing has been done. Just another fight that can't be won. Spinning circles, maybe it's a sign of what's to come. We're back to where we started at square one. Empty things that we must try. The pattern of our days leave us helpless in the night. The inner shadows twist and grow, swallow light that once did show. Now we're back to where we started. Nothing has been done. Just another fight that can't be won. Spinning circles, maybe it's a sign of what's to come. We're back to where we started at square one. We're back to where we started at square one.
Kind of the same with this show too, people. I'm just like, that's kind of my one thing, is like no political talk. I just not into it. But there's hundreds of other shows if you're into political talk. There, yep. You know, there's
other podcasts.
There's a lot of them. So I mean, I just feel like I have nothing to bring to it. Like I have nothing new to it. Like,
exactly. Yeah. If you felt like you had something new to say, great. Right. But if you don't, what's the point in repeating something that you heard from somebody else?
Yeah. But yeah, I. But yeah, man, I'm with you. I know, especially, you know, the big part of it is the last like 2 years of my life, like, been a real struggle. Finally getting to a much better place, mentally, and working on getting there physically. My mom was diagnosed with brain cancer in June of, 19 and, passed in December of 19. And so like dealing with all that with her, especially how you know, sudden and fast everything.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I can't imagine.
It was, it really messed my head up. And we were really tight too. Like me and my mom were, go to a lot of shows together and stuff, you know. So like we had a real strong relationship. And then of course, right after she passed, to go into a global pandemic. And
right, yeah.
So man. Like, it was just like a lot of stuff, like, you know, just on my mind all the time. And just like those days where you're just, you know.
Because then you're at home with all of that, you know, like you can't. You're not really doing, you can't do too much then to escape what's going on in your head.
My escape is live music, and it was, you know.
Right. Yeah. So, and that was shut down.
Yeah. You know, that's my thing. Like, and like, I always kind of found that music and the people always kind of make me happy. So like, that was where I started trying to go to shows as often as possible just to, you know, and it's like, if I can kind of take my mind off everything for an hour or two at the show and just enjoy the music and the energy of the people and stuff, and not get lost in my head of thinking about all the bad shit that's going on. So
yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, it's good that you know what is a release for you. You know, like that's good, because not everybody finds that. True. You know, like it took me a long time to realize that actually what I do, singing, is one for me. Like I realized that I would feel much better. So during the pandemic, like when, especially whenever that hit and suddenly I couldn't go out and sing anymore, it was like, you know, what do I do? Like I suddenly felt like I had no purpose. And then it took realizing that actually singing is what makes me feel better most days. And so then I started doing the live streams, and then I got tired of doing that because it's like not playing in front of anybody sucks.
Sure.
You know, so even though there's people watching, you know, on Facebook Live, like I couldn't do it anymore. Right. You can't hear.
Sure.
You know,
the heart's going up as, you know, if
yeah,
it's one, but
only
yeah,
doing so
but,
much. Yeah. Like, so
yeah, I'm with you. Like, it's just, it's a weird thing that would happen. I mean, but at least you had some sort of connection, but at the same time, it's like, never going to replace.
No. And neither should you expect anything to. I mean, that's not the point.
Right.
You know, you shouldn't have to. It's fine that's there. You know, you just live with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, nothing's going to replace the, even as a fan, I like going out to shows. Like I'd tune in for a little bit. I'd watch like a song or whatever. Yeah, it sounds cool. Sounds good. But like, I get nothing out of it either. Like, as much as you're not getting that feedback, I'm not feeling it either. Like,
right.
It's just, you know, very, you know, but it's a very stale kind of thing. Cause like, you know, you're not, no matter how great you play or how the band's live or whatever, it's still not that energy they're giving back.
Right. Yeah. Cause the energy isn't necessarily just from the band. It's from the crowd giving that energy back to the band, and the band, like, just, it's just a, you know, a constant circle basically. Right. And you also, as one person in a crowd, feed off the energy of the rest of the crowd too, that they're giving back to the band. So yeah, no,
there's something magical that happens, at a show like that. And it's just like, it doesn't come through on a, phone, you know, whatever.
People being into it, it makes all the difference.
Yeah, man. So I really can't wait till we get back full steam with everything. You know, like, we're really getting to get sweaty on the patio out there at Oyster Bar. Or
yeah.
Whatever, you know, which I think is, as we're recording this, things are, I think they're going back to late nights and stuff over there, and full bands starting this week. So all that is fine by me, and
that's
all
great,
good signs. So
that's awesome.
I think calendar is filling up really fast with like all these great tours coming through town and stuff.
Oh, I can imagine. So yeah, and it was because like 2022 is going to be nuts, because like so many people push their tours off until then, you know. And like, because like I'm seeing Roger Waters in Nashville in like August next year.
All right.
You know, because I was supposed to see him, I think, August of 2020, but obviously
I like I've seen some people do it like where it's like, you know, world tour or whatever, 2019, cross that out, 2020, cross that out. You know, I'm like, and so
yeah,
it makes me laugh. I mean, it's sad, but it's also kind of funny. So, but yeah, man, let's, we've got one more. We did live acoustic today, and this was another just, fun. This was a cover of Oasis.
Yep.
And your version of their song "Stand By Me," And we kind of mentioned, even Pink Floyd and heading over there to for a show in England, right?
Yeah.
So like, Suede, yeah, was that, so I'm guessing like, are you, and even Beatles, like, I'm guessing that's all that stuff's like a pretty big influence on you, right? And all the, English pop stuff like that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Basically just all the British bands. Right. I'm aside from, the artists that are so well known from the, previous decades, like a lot of my influences come from like 90s Britpop, like people like Oasis or just Noel Gallagher in general. Like his solo stuff is pretty good. So is Liam's. Yeah. People like Suede, Pulp, Supergrass, and then even into more modern acts like the Maccabees, who actually aren't even a band anymore. But I got to see them when I lived in Chicago, and it was so crazy to see them, or like see Kasabian or people like that, because when the Maccabees came over, like over there in England and in Europe and stuff like that, they can pack theaters. And then they came here to like a 500 person venue, and there were maybe 100 people there, and this is Chicago, like one of the, probably the third biggest city in the country, and I don't think that they cared, it's cool enough for them to be in America maybe, but it's just odd. Like I wish that there were more people into that kind of music here. I just feel a lot more connection with that. And so every now and then I think like, maybe I should just like be pushing for go over there instead, so who knows? That kind of stuff's my thing.
Yeah. I got friends like that too. Like, the same thing. Like they'll go play in Europe and they're like rock stars.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come home to St. Louis or whatever, and nobody knows who they are. Like,
yeah,
it's just kind of a strange thing that, you would think it'd be the other way around. And like, but
well, America is so big. Right. Like people don't realize that. Like England is about the size of Illinois. And so almost territorial, it makes it a little easier too. And like, then if you just separate each country, you've got so many different cultures just within one continent. Whereas with ours, if you want to call America a melting pot, whatever, but like, there's still a pervading sense of this one solid culture, maybe not necessarily monoculture anymore, but there, everything is just a little smaller. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's why, and maybe that's also why they have this sense of how important music is to them, because I don't know. I can't explain it.
Yeah. I don't know. It's an interesting thing for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But what about Stand By Me? Is there anything that in particular why you picked this song, or is there any, or is it just one that Oasis just kind of stuck out to you?
Yeah. I just, the album that it's off of Be Here Now, I actually just, today's record store day. And I went out and bought that album on vinyl.
Oh, nice.
Not necessarily why I picked that, but like, it's like one of the Oasis songs that I know how to play that not everybody would be like, oh yeah, I know that song. I don't want to sit here and play Wonderwall,
Right.
That's
one of my favorite memes is, Hulk Hogan with a guitar and like, anyway, here's Wonderwall, brother.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and it's just like Liam has Oasis vocalist has done an acoustic version of it. And I thought it sounded great as an acoustic song. They've got a version, I think, that's more unplugged, on like the extended edition of Be Here Now. And it just works really well as that. I wouldn't necessarily say there was any particular reason why I chose that song other than that I like it.
So. Yeah, man.
To learn, said I wouldn't, I'd be leaving one day before my heart starts to burn. So what's the matter with you? Sing me something new. Don't you know the cold and wind and rain don't know, they only seem to come and go away. Times are high. upon the floor. Maybe you and I would not believe in the things we find behind the door. So what's the matter with you? Sing me something new. Don't you know the cold and wind and rain don't know? They only seem to come and go away. Stand by me. Nobody knows the way it's gonna be. Stand by me. Nobody knows the way it's gonna be. Stand by me. Nobody knows. Yeah, nobody knows the way it's gonna be. You're leaving, will you take me with you? I'm tired of talking on my phone. There is one thing I could never give you. My heart will never be your home. So what's the matter with you? Sing me something. Don't you know the cold and wind and rain don't know? They only seem to come and go away. Hey, stand by me. Nobody knows the way it's gonna be. Stand by me. Nobody knows the way it's gonna be. Stand by me. Nobody knows. Yeah, nobody knows the way it's gonna be. The way it's gonna be. Yeah, maybe I can see. Yeah, don't you know the cold and wind and rain don't know? They only seem to come and go away. Stand by me. Nobody knows the way it's gonna be. Stand by me. Nobody knows the way it's gonna be. Stand by me. Nobody knows. Yeah, nobody knows way it's gonna be.
Yeah, so you're pretty big vinyl enthusiast too.
I'd say medium. Yeah. This is really the first record store day that I've purposefully gone out and celebrated. Like, there have been times where I accidentally showed up on a record store day and was like, oh crap, you know. But this is the first time where I actually went and stood in line before a place opened, and I went and ended up buying like 10 different vinyls today, or vinyl, sorry. I know vinyl is the plural term too, but for all you sticklers.
Yeah, they always, Gary on Stern Show, Gary Dell'Abate, they always, he always has pieces of vinyl, and like, you know, does he always, and it just makes me laugh. Like, I mean, yeah, that's proper, but it's just like funny to think about, like, you know, like, that he, you know, he kind of gets on people that say vinyls or whatever, stuff like that. Like,
a slip of the tongue. That's why I try to just say records, because that can be plural.
Yeah, I think it's the same with Lego. There's no
it's not Legos?
No, it's not Legos.
Really?
It's Lego bricks. you can say because
I always say, like, if I reference something, I'll be like, you know, like stepping on Legos or something.
Yeah, but awesome. Apparently, like, purist, especially for Lego, like, they, you know, they're like, because there's the show now, Lego Master.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Like, in there, and they're very particular. Don't, it's not Legos, it's Lego.
I haven't encountered a hardcore Lego culture, but okay. Yeah. I'll take their word for it.
I mean,
my,
like,
apologies if I said Legos.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Like, I was, I'm sure I said it, but, like, since watching the show and all this stuff, like,
yeah,
you know, but I just kind of, now it sticks with me in my head now. I'm like,
yeah, now it's going to stick with me. So, yeah, like, so it's like, how do I, so I drive a Prius and I've always wondered, how would you pluralize that? Yeah. Is it Priuses? That just doesn't sound right to me. Prii? Yeah, I don't know.
Prii. Yeah.
It's a field of Prii.
Yeah. But yeah, man, I didn't participate in Record Store Day this year. But I did, I do buy a ton of vinyl. I recently bought the latest was, new Black Keys Delta Cream record I bought on vinyl. And I, what was cool on their website, you could actually, they linked you to your local record store. So I actually purchased it through Vintage Vinyl.
Oh,
and
nice.
So
very
I
cool.
got to support my local business and, yeah. and get one of my favorite records now and all the stuff. And
yeah, Vintage is great.
Yeah. So I just, and I hadn't been down there, you know, it's like, it's kind of a drive for me. And it's like, I love going down there when I can, but it was just really super convenient to shop online, grab the record, and they dropped it in the mail and showed up at my door.
Yeah.
2 days later, and instead of having to go through Amazon or something like that. And,
yeah, that's,
you know,
fantastic.
Whatever, so.
There just happened to be a, there was a Suede record that I really wanted as a live performance at Brixton Academy in 93 that was like specifically coming out today. And there's only 7,000 copies. And so I called around to all the local places and like none of them had it. And then I called one that was about 30 minutes away and they're like, yeah, we got 3 copies of it. And so I was like, I'm going to be there. Yeah. So I don't know if I it's possible that I grabbed, I'm the only person that grabbed a copy, even though they had 3, because I don't know how many Suede fans in America, unfortunately. Yeah. So if you like Suede, please get a hold of me.
Yeah. Right. but yeah, man, very cool. I don't know. I love the whole process. You know, I talk about it quite a bit on the show too, but just like, I enjoy one, just browsing through the store. I enjoy the active physical, you know, part of listening to music that way with a record player. And,
you pay more attention for sure.
And then I like the large artwork and the liner notes and different things that you come, you know, all the different things that come with it all, compared to just trying to scrunch everything into a, you know, a CD or into a JPEG file on your phone and stuff.
That's like, I love Spotify, but that's the thing is you don't get to look at any of that stuff. And maybe if you want to Wikipedia it or something like that. And if you're lucky enough that it's even on there, but, you're totally right. And sometimes with vinyl too, like people make it more worth your money, like by putting posters in there or something like that, which is if I ever do a run of vinyl, which I hope to maybe after my next EP comes out, maybe do like side A is like this EP, side B is the next one, you know, just want to make it more worth, like not put extra stuff in there.
Yeah.
That's the idea. So it's just so expensive.
Yeah. So. Yeah, man. Yeah. One, especially like, I do feel like maybe prices have come down a bit because of such a resurgence, you know, and I know it's still expensive, but like, it's not as, you know, elusive as it once was.
Sure.
Like,
yeah. I can imagine.
You know, there was, I think at one time, you know, a lot of these factories had closed because nobody's buying vinyl records.
Right.
So there was very few record factories even available. So the prices were, you know, higher for supply and demand.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, since the physical products have started coming back more, vinyl sales are just as much now as anything, you know. So like, so I think that's definitely helped.
Bring
the market back up
for physical copies. That's what people want anymore. And like, I know that there's like a small subculture of people that do like even do cassette tapes now, or not cassette tapes. You know what I mean? Tapes.
Yeah.
Which isn't quite my thing, but
yeah, I mean, but that's like, it's, there's definitely a niche thing, like, you know.
Yeah, yeah, people, there's nothing wrong with that.
There's people same thing. I think there's a nostalgia attached to it all.
Sure. My first music was a tape.
Yeah,
so
yeah, I definitely had tapes and CDs and, you know, a lot of outdated media now.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, so it's like, yeah, because I'm struggling with whether to even put this EP on CDs, and I know that there's still going to be like some people that want a physical copy of some sort of something. Mm-hmm. I think I'm just going to do like a really short run. It's just tough to decide to do that or not, you know.
Well, hopefully, so you said that's fall we're looking at?
Yeah, it should be at like late summer, early fall. I would currently guess the EP will be out September 10th.
Okay.
Is my best guess, because I'm kind of trying to plan things along a 6-week trajectory. So we've got, you know, the single coming out June 18th. Should have the video for it out about 6 weeks later, which is actually being produced by a guy around here. He lives in St. Charles. Brian Clover is doing it.
All right.
And then about 6 weeks after that, it'll probably be like the EP. And then maybe another 6 weeks after that, it'll be another video. You know, you never know. It's just just trying to like balance, because, you know, now every day is content, you know, so.
Yeah. Well, you can find Chris on your Facebook and Instagram and get plugged in for more details with those releases and everything. So follow along there, and you can also play some bar gigs, doing more cover stuff like that Oasis song and things.
Yep.
So if you want to come support those shows, but hopefully we'll get some stuff with the band and be able to play this new material soon. And
Hoping maybe if things are looking up like they keep doing, hoping maybe like October for the first gig with this material, you know, because all the bar and winery things that I do are just me solo acoustic on my own.
Yeah, man. But that'd be fun to get a nice proper release party together. And
yeah, that'd be fantastic.
And, you know, get to debut some of this new stuff out there.
Yeah. And maybe even some of the new stuff that I'm working on now, too.
So. Yeah. Yeah, man. Well, very cool. Well, Chris, I've been going around asking some silly questions, and I thought I'd get your take on some of these.
Okay.
What's a song that always gets stuck in your head besides your bridge from when you were 17?
Yeah. The Crank Anchors theme tune from the Comedy Central show way back in the early 2000s. Yeah. Or the Andy Griffith theme tune.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Oh, man. I played in a band with a bass player who would purposefully start whistling that around me whenever he probably thought I didn't have it in my head, and then it would be in my head.
Right. So. Oh, yeah. That's definitely an... I get to whistling, and it's always there for sure.
Yeah.
Especially at work, I just get, I don't know why, but that's what one of my things. I just start whistling, and all of a sudden it would be the Andy Griffith theme for some reason.
Yeah. The menu music for the Nintendo Wii is another one that happens all the time. Do, 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 do. Oh, constantly.
Yeah. What would be a dream dinner for you? Like if you could invite maybe three or four, whatever, people from past or present that you'd like to just hang out and have a conversation at dinner or something?
Oh, man.
Is there some?
I hate to be obvious, but John Lennon, I guess, is one. My grandpa Jim would be great, too.
Yeah, man.
Let's see. And a third one. Damn it. I hate filling with empty space. It can be edited.
It's fine. Yeah.
It's a good question. A third one, I would pick maybe Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Man. Yeah, I bet he has some stories to share.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. That'd be pretty wild. All right. What about today we have a Chris action figure. What would be your three accessories with your action figure?
So I'm going to say one that I think everybody else would probably say, which is hair products, probably. I don't know if it's like my shampoo and conditioner and maybe just the stuff I put in it to tame it. Because if you see a picture of me, you'll see that I have very long, blonde, curly hair that everybody likes to point out to me, that as if I didn't know that it was there. So that'd be one, I guess.
Do you have any products you want to mention?
I'm gonna plug some products.
Some endorsement deals.
All I use is Tresemme.
Yeah.
Luxurious moisture shampoo and conditioner, and then
I think it was like a Will Ferrell thing, or the Mane and Tail, or something like that. He made like a joke that he like uses that horse shampoo or something like that. I don't know. It always made me laugh. Like, but apparently, like that's a real thing. I guess some people actually do. But I'm like, it just made me laugh thinking about that. Like, Mane and Tail. That's what I use.
I guess could an animal count as an accessory that comes with me? Is it limitless or no? Okay, I was gonna say because my dog Gats.
Yeah, I mean it's your.
Okay, I guess it's my action figure. Yeah. I get to choose whatever I want, and I'm sure probably a guitar.
Yeah, you know? That sounds pretty good.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, man. That would yeah, that's fun.
I'm sure I'll have to hear from some people later. Like, oh, you should have said this because I don't know. It's hard to think about yourself in that way. You know, yeah. Everybody else is a bit more observant.
Yeah, that's what's kind of fun about it. Like, it's a ridiculous thing to think about even in...
Definitely hair products, though, yeah. Probably.
Yeah. All right. If you could get into the Guinness Book of World Records for something, what do you think it might be?
Oh, man. Oh, that's a good question. I don't want to say Smashing Guitars, which by the way is held by one of my favorite guitarists, I think still on one tour, which is Matt Bellamy from Muse. I think he did like 140 in 2004 or something like that. That's nuts. I don't know if I could ever smash a guitar. Right.
I did see,
maybe like eating the most wasabi almonds like ever.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God. They're so good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or like, no, most pounds of peanut butter eaten in a year. That's the one. That's what I want. Pounds of peanut butter eaten. I used to keep track. So I don't anymore. I probably need to do that again. But my roommate in college and I used to keep track of how many pounds of peanut butter I would eat. So,
yeah, I don't know, man. But next podcast, we might have to have a challenge or something, a peanut butter off or something.
Oh, man, I could destroy a jar. That, like, give me that in a jar of Nutella. It's going to be gone. Like,
I just discovered, I'd heard about it many times from people, but finally went to a Trader Joe's myself and got cookie butter over there, and it's so good.
That sounds amazing. I've recently switched to almond butter too, and that is expensive but good.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, man. All right. What about your peanut butter? Are you smooth or crunchy?
I could go either or. I mostly probably do smooth though.
Yeah.
And I'm not necessarily that completely brand loyal, but I would say most often probably get Skippy.
Yeah.
Yeah. The natural one.
You can't go wrong with some Skippy.
Skippy. And when I was a kid, I grew up with Peter Pan, you know.
Like, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think whenever I was in college, my roommate and I would get Jif, you know, doesn't.
Yeah.
Peanut butter is peanut butter. I'll eat it all.
That's all good. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, that's my answer, to eat the most peanut butter like in one sitting.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
What would be a dream duet or collaboration you'd like to see for yourself?
It would be really cool to do a duet or a collaboration with Ellie Roswell from Wolf Alice, which is, of course, another British band. But I think they might be doing decent in America. I don't know.
Wolf Alice?
Wolf Alice, yeah. Right. I don't necessarily know how to describe them because their records are, the songs are so different from each other, but they still fit together really well. Like, they've got some more like Wallace Sound stuff. They've got some like harder, shouty, punky stuff. And just some beautiful stuff too. They just put out a new album actually called Blue Weekend that came out maybe a week ago or something. Okay. And it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think to do one with her would be really cool.
To check it out. That's kind of why I like to ask, because I like to, you know, people will say different things like that and people I've never heard of, and get to go do some homework and try to see
either her or Damon Albarn from Blur and Gorillaz, because he just like, what a creative person to have as many projects as he has, you know, and constantly change who he is, you know.
Yeah,
so that's awesome.
Yeah, even a cartoon.
Yeah, true. Yeah, yeah. He turns stuff to her, and then like, because he's got another great band, The Good, The Bad, and The Queen, that only put out two albums, but man, they're good.
Yeah, yeah, I like still a jam that Clint Eastwood and stuff.
Yeah,
like, I mean,
that's a good one.
Yep. I mean, I listen to a lot of the the, you know, 90s on 9 and Pop 2K in my car and stuff. So I like to listen to a lot of that stuff and, you know, you'll hear, they'll come in there.
Yep.
But yeah, man. Let's see. We got, what else I got for you? All right. For the, all right, the day we have a biopic, who would you like? Who do you think they should would be good to be cast to play you in the movie version?
Oh man,
is there any you ever get you look like anybody?
Yeah, like Robert Plant. You know, I get that all the time. Or Peter Frampton. Of course, they're all a bit old now. Too old to play me.
And a dude with long blonde curly hair.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I remember. So I'm really into football. And by that I mean soccer,
right?
If you want me to put it that way. And there's like a football podcast I listen to out of England called Football Ramble, and they came over to Chicago on tour and did like a live show there. And I met a couple of guys at the end, one of them's like, "You look like Dave Mustaine," or I think he even told me I looked like a young James Hetfield, which I don't know if I'll take that, but whatever. I was just like, all right, whatever. It's just anybody with long blonde hair.
I think if you like cut it into chops and maybe more.
Then I would see it. Yeah. I mean, instead of the full.
All right. Yeah,
scraggly beard kind of thing. Yeah.
That would be cool though. I
don't know who I'd have to.
Yeah,
because I'd have to pick somebody younger.
Yeah,
a mix. If all those people could have a baby, that's who it would be. Yeah. All right.
Man, James Hetfield. I love Metallica, but there's somebody made like a supercut of like all the times he says
yeah.
But I love it. Those are some that's one, man. That's like one of the you mentioned McCartney at Bush, and like that obviously would have been an incredible night too. But I really the one that I've missed out on. I feel like it would have been super cool to see Metallica there at Bush and that summer. So that's one. Both of them, but like I get to see a lot of cool shows, but there's definitely some that I don't have the money to swing and make it happen. But
I don't know if I would have at the time would have had the money to see Paul if it weren't for, because I think my grandma went with me and she bought tickets like for me and like a several others. So I think it's because of her that I went, because at that point in time I don't think I really had too much expendable income.
Right. Yeah. Well, thanks grandma.
Thank you very much, grandma. Thanks.
Yeah, man. Well, very cool, bud. This has been a fun day, man. I'm really glad we made this happen. And
yeah, me too.
Getting to talk about some of this stuff. And again, you can find what is going to be the name of the EP?
Square One.
You told me that.
Yeah, that's right.
Square One, available this fall. So keep an eye out for that. But the debut single, June 18th, you'll be able to find that wherever you're getting your digital music at. And so feel free to add that to your favorite Spotify playlist or whatever and give it a spin. And take it on the road with you. Tell everybody about it.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, man.
And, absolutely.
But I appreciate you doing this. And
I appreciate you meeting me.
I say we do it again sometime soon, man.
Maybe around the EP. How about that?
We can do that.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Right on. Well, thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
See ya.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Well, yeah, that was it.